Ladies and gentlemen, what is going on? Season 7 of the Smack Hospitality Podcast is about to begin, 100 plus episodes into the Smack experience, and we are kicking off the season strong with a doubleheader featuring Simon Naudi, the CEO of the Carinthia Hotel Group and International Hotel Investments, and Chris Hartley, the CEO of the Global Hotel Alliance. Chris, Simon, and I sat down during the annual CEO conference of the Global Hotel Alliance at the Carinthia Grand Hotel Astoria in Brussels and had a chat about GHA's recent expansions, why the Alliance is perhaps as popular as it has ever been, and of course, Carinthia Hotel's plans for the future and how luxury travel has evolved. We also introduced the two CEOs to our new format, Book, Buy, Bulldoze, during the podcast, where we gave them three brands each to book, buy, or bulldoze. Enjoy the season. Enjoy the show. Gentlemen, a pleasure. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the time, Chris and Simon. What a wonderful place. We'll get into that in just a second. Chris, I'll start with you, if I may. Welcome back to Smack. Before we started the recording, we just realized it's been a hot 4 years ago since we last spoke, where it's a special couple of days here for GHA. There's a lot going on, and thank you, obviously, to you and the team for the invite. I'll start with a very easy one. A lot has changed in 4 years. Give me a rundown of just the last 6 months of GHA, because there's been quite a bit of news. There's been quite a lot going on, new brands, new ideas. Give me a quick rundown of the last couple of 6 months.
Well, it's really been a positive period for the Alliance. Thank you for having me back. Certainly 4 years ago, it was a lot different.
It was a different conversation, no?
We were coming out of a very, very difficult period, and most of us in the hospitality sector wondering if we were going to survive. And here we are 4 years later. Yeah, the last 6 months in particular have been very strong. We've come up three ridiculously good years as people started traveling again and rates have been crazy. Pretty much every market in the world has been firing on all cylinders. And so the numbers generally have been very good. But what's been fantastic for the Alliance in the recent months is the really big focus on loyalty among the big brand players. So pretty much everyone in hospitality is talking about their loyalty program. Marriott's all about Bonvoy and Hilton Honors and Accor Live Limitless. And so suddenly loyalty's become a focus for the industry. And that's put us, the Alliance, in a very good position. Because if you don't want to be part of one of those big brand loyalty programs, then suddenly Global Hotel Alliance becomes interesting. And so we've signed several new brands. We signed, I think last year, 32,000 new rooms. Over 100 hotels will be joining the Alliance in the next year. So we're going to expand significantly. And that just has a multiple of positive benefits in terms of new customers, new brands, new choice. And it enriches the Alliance proposition and makes us more competitive.
Of which Carinthia is an important part. Simon, we've never had the chance to have someone from the Carinthia on the podcast. So this is a first for us in many ways as the group CEO. If you don't mind me saying so, and we've obviously done a little bit of research, spoke to some people, when we talk about luxury in the hospitality business, your name and the Carinthia's name is synonymous with that, without being necessarily in all of the headlines every time. I can see a smile on your face already. Is that part of the DNA kind of Carinthia, the whole idea of Grand Boutique that you guys follow as well? Is that a good intro?
That's a perfect intro. we should have scripted that ourselves, actually. I think, to use your description, it's the DNA of who we are, right? So we are a company that started in the smallest country in Europe. So we certainly don't come with a lot of airs and graces. Grew the business over 62 years now, family business. Started as a restaurant in Malta, on an island in Malta. And really the company grew in parallel to the growth of Malta, in effect, yeah, in the tourism sector, which replaced the military bases that marked our history for thousands of years. Yeah. So we've always seen ourselves a bit like the David and Goliath in the industry. We've never really approached it by thinking we know everything. Actually, our strategy is to learn of every place we go to. And that really has filtered down and now into the brand itself. And what do we mean by Carinthia? So our aim is, yes, to grow globally, but certainly want to stay true to the spirit inside the company. We're very much a close-knit management team, I would say. Of course, we keep growing every year. We keep adding new hotels. But the big job, and certainly what I consider one of my bigger tasks in the group, besides the financial side and the investment side, more importantly, is keeping that spirit alive in the organization as we grow. And we'd like to define ourselves by being local. So if we're in London, as you know, we have a lovely hotel in London, we want that hotel to feel British. If we're here in Brussels, we want to bring out the best of Belgium. If we're in Budapest, now we're in New York and all the other lovely cities and resorts we're growing into, we'd like to bring out the best of what is in that location. Because ultimately, people travel, yes, of course, to stay in lovely hotels, but they want to be and want to feel that they are in the destination they're visiting. And it's our responsibility, therefore. We see that as a part of our duty to bring out the best of the cities and resorts we're in.
Is that how is that going to translate into the future, Simon? Because obviously there's a couple of openings coming up, and not too long ago this house opened here where we are today in Brussels, December, if I'm well informed, and I would imagine creating something that you guys are creating with the Carinthia takes just that much attention to detail, and especially when localizing a product the way that you just explained. How have you gone about that with the team? As you said, coming from a small island in Malta, that probably isn't the number one destination. When if you'd ask, where would you think a luxury hotel chain has started? Not too many people would probably say Malta at the top of their heads. So how have you gone from or what are you doing? Give me one or two things that you're doing in taking that around the world now. And also, how's your sleep schedule these days, Simon, with the time zones?
I was going to give you a very simple answer, and the answer was working harder and harder. Yeah? I referred to this a little bit earlier, right? The big challenge we have is scaling up. And that's a combination of, one, promoting from inside the company. So as much as we can, we'd like to give opportunities to people who are already in Carinthia, who already know and feel and act on our behalf. Just one example, we've just appointed a new general manager for our hotel in London, our flagship hotel, certainly up until now. And we've appointed Charlotte, who has been with us for several years. So that's a bit of a manifestation of us putting a focus on wanting to retain the spirit of Carinthia Live. And the second part is to add new people to our team. So even organizationally, as a group, we are a little bit different to most brands in that we are primarily investors. We own real estate. We're also developers. We develop real estate. And then the brand, the Carinthia Hotels brand, is the third part, which is arguably the toughest bit, which is the operational part, right? Which is the intangible part of giving the right service. And what do we mean by the right service? Literally up until a few years ago, it was a very tight-knit team, as I described, and now the chairman who founded the company, myself and a few others who grew that business. As we grow, we're bringing on more and more people to the team. So we've just added a CEO in the brand, in Carinthia Hotels, who's just joined us literally a year ago. We've added people to our investment team and people, senior executives to our development team. And the idea here is to find a balance between the entrepreneurial side of our company. We're a business at the end of the day with a strong entrepreneurial spirit.
The bottom line still matters.
Yes. Yeah. And the technical side. Yeah, the know-how and the knowledge and the technical ability to see through whatever the entrepreneurial side would like us to achieve.
Chris, if we listen to that and we think of luxury travel, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. Would you say that perhaps the Alliance is in a probably the best position it's been ever since its creation because of the whole idea of how travel has developed, personalization? You talked about this already. The Hilton Honors and the Marriott Bonvoys and the Accor, they have their place in the world, and not to take anything away from that. But we have seen, this whole idea of experiential travel, for example, which is something where I would imagine you sometimes sit in your office and smile and think, well, you know, we've got that. We've got 40 plus brands. We, you know, you can choose from a whole portfolio of things with one program with Discovery. Does that put a smile on your face sometimes? Surely it does.
It does. I think the irony is that we have the best products of any group of brands in the world. I don't think any of the major brands, and I won't keep naming them because it annoys me to have to name them, but yeah, any of the major
trouble
brands
as well,
would be anything but thrilled to have every single one of the brands that we have in the alliance. And I think the group of 45 brands that we have today is arguably a lot richer in terms of a consumer proposition, in terms of what today's consumer is looking for. 40 years ago, yes, consumers looked for a standardized product, a secure product, somewhere where, you know, you wouldn't get food poisoning and it was safe in a city that you didn't know. Today, it's exactly the opposite. And I think if you came to a city like Brussels, where we're sitting here, and you ended up in a bog standards chain hotel, you just haven't really experienced the city in the way people want to experience cities today. And so all the brands like Carinthia, whether it's Kempinski, the Doyle Collection, Leela Group in India, you can choose these different markets around the world, and I'll give you one of our brands that represents that local market, the local community, the local culture. And what Simon was saying about how they built the Carinthia brand to represent in each market that they operate that local culture, it's because they've themselves developed and created this product that then resonates with people who travel and are looking for something different. Our challenge, and that's when I don't have such a big smile on my face, is it's so difficult to compete with the billions of dollars that the big brands and faceless networks like the online travel agencies are throwing at the travel sector to try and capture our customers and make us pay a lot of money for those customers. And so our challenge is not the lack of great product. Yeah. We have the best products in the world. And I say that
with every confidence. Yeah.
But what we don't have is the marketing funds, the billions, literally $20 billion spent by the online travel agents last year on search. Well, you just can't compete with that. So what do we have to do? Well, collaboration is the best way to try a little bit and compete and get these products in front of customers. Because I think Simon will be the first to admit, a typical American going to New York, where you now operate the Surrey, well, they probably know the Surrey because it's a landmark, but the Carinthia brand name is not that well known in the United States. Well, how do you get in front of an American customer who might be coming to New York and, and get them to choose one of their those brands that they might not have otherwise known? That's our challenge.
I would say something about our brand not being known in the US.
I had a feeling that might cause a rebuttal.
Of all our clients, a third of our clients around the world are from the US. Huh? And that's mainly because of our London hotel.
London property, yeah.
That's that's really put us on the map.
That's put you on the map.
With the high-end US market.
Yes, I agree.
Has loyalty changed, Chris, in hospitality? It's a big question on a casual Tuesday afternoon, but
I think it's changing. It's evolved. It's become a means to an end rather than an end in itself. I think people get confused about loyalty programs. They think loyalty, especially at the luxury sector, that it's sort of a dirty word because it implies discounts and low-end customers who are just trying to get something for free or cheap.
Free upgrade.
The airlines obviously invented travel loyalty programs and they did a great job, but they still exist today. So first of all, they still work. Otherwise, why are most airline loyalty programs more valuable than the airlines that operate them? And why are all these big hospitality brands putting such an emphasis on the loyalty programs? But the reason that they do that has changed. And that's because you need to capture customer data. And I was just saying that the difficulty for smaller brands is to have that customer reach. Customer reach costs a lot of money. And loyalty programs are an inexpensive way of reaching customers, because what you're basically teaching your hotel owners and operators to do is capture as much data as possible, find out as much as you can about your customers, and then communicate them directly and get them engaged. And a loyalty program is actually just a mechanism to engage customers, to stop them booking through a third party. I mean, why would a beautiful Carinthia hotel charging $1,000 a night want to pay $200 per night to a third party to sell that if they can sell that booking themselves? You're the owner operator of that hotel. That's $200 extra for that very night straight to the bottom line. And so that's the challenge. And where loyalty plays such an important role for operators today is that ability, because hotels own the customer. They're Carinthia's customers, they're Kempinski's customers, they're not Booking.com's customers. The experience is delivered by Kempinski and by Carinthia and by the Leela Group and by Minor, Anantara's, and all these wonderful brands. And they own that customer relationship. So loyalty is the way of telling them, you have to engage with this customer. Mm. And it's a mindset change for the operator. And once you can give a reason for that customer to use your loyalty program, that 10 times less likely to actually book through a third party. And so for a hotel owner, and most two-thirds of our 850 hotels are owner-operators, mm. that's straight to the bottom line. Yeah. It's different if you're a franchise.
It's a different story. No, not for sure.
It's all about revenue. But yeah. you're operating and owning a hotel. If you can shift that booking away from a third party, you're adding significantly to your profit.
To the bottom line, yeah. Simon, the luxury traveler, let's talk about him or her. We've kind of seen, you know, talked about travel trends, and I'm sure you guys have, you know, people that look at that upside down and sideways and analyze like most others do. And yet it does feel, when I look at the Corinthian, we've done a little bit of research. When I look at your website, it does feel like you do a couple things different. And I'm going to start with the compliments eventually, just to make sure, you know, it doesn't get overhand. But it does feel like what you guys are doing is to sell a little bit more than the hotel room, as you said, the whole idea of localization. Is that because, or is that only because it's part of your DNA, like you said, or is that also because you feel like the ultra high-end traveler, which I would imagine in 9 times out of 10 is probably the individual that stays at your hotels, has, you know, created sort of that demand and luxury travel perhaps has changed?
It's a good question. I wouldn't say changed because really and truly, people are people, right?
Right.
And humans have been humans forever. What is certain is, one, there is certainly more product on offer, so one has to differentiate oneself. And when we sit down and think about this, really, what it boils down to, yes, and people will say it's about the experience and the service. Of course it is, yeah. but that's a given.
Right.
I would try, on a practical side, what we would do in Corinthian is, one, focus on the details, focus on the touch points. So if you're in a bedroom, what is the client or the customer or the traveler actually touching, experiencing in the room, the amenities in the room? So as a developer, we spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the building, on the electrics, on the insulation, on the foundations. But the reality is, what the client is interacting with are the far simpler things, yes? And the crockery and the cutlery. And so we would always try and focus on those details and make them a little bit different or sometimes even quirky. We even came out with a slogan for this, right, in our company. So we spent a long time last year trying to say, okay, the brand is growing. We're becoming more and more visible in more important cities and resorts. How do we describe ourselves? And some very clever marketing people who sat down with us and spoke to us came out with the phrase Grand Boutique. And that is exactly who we are, right? So most of our buildings that tend to be grand buildings, like the one we're in. But then we don't want to be too, what's the word in English, starchy? Yeah, starch in terms of the service. So, and then to infuse the spirit of a boutique hotel, which tends to be a family-run hotel, or certainly a hotel where individuals are more prominent, what we're trying to do is merge the two, right? So offer the grand architectural experience, but then in the boutique style, in terms of the interaction between the customer and the hotel.
And I would imagine when you thought about this and you know, with the support of the people that came up with this in Grand Boutique, how did you go about, in a couple of sentences, how did you go about infusing that into the team? Because I would imagine a company like yours with quite a bit of, you know, legacy to it, if you don't mind me saying so, coming up, you know, taking people on a journey to through growth, as you already said, is one challenge. And then infusing new elements like the Grand Boutique slogan, which is also something that is nice on paper and it's great in an email, but it needs to be done at the front desk and the concierge, you know what I mean? That's surely something that you guys must have been
totally
spending time on.
I'm a strong believer that branding, and you're the expert in branding, starts with HR. Mm. True branding is an HR exercise. So it's not like we try to say, okay, what should a hotel company look like? That's not the question. The question is who are we? And then try and articulate that with a branding message. So half the effort on branding really is in the HR team and in the way we, one, employ people, the way we induct people into the company, and in the way we follow our colleagues through their careers and through their development inside
accompany them. I have a topic that I think when I looked at some of the things that you guys do in the Alliance, Chris, more often than not, there's an element now where obviously sustainability in different shapes and forms and sizes is on the map, and yet there's a thin line between, you know, the whole idea of greenwashing and actually adding some purpose to it. I know it's something that's been close to the Alliance's heart for a hot minute, not just since it's become, you know, public out there, let's put it that way. Give me some things, Chris, that you've seen in terms of sustainability and also some things that you're trying to do in the Alliance. And what role do you feel that's going to take in the years to come? Because, you know, during COVID, there was this notion where people had a little bit more time on their hands. There wasn't that much travel, as you and I both know, because we spoke during COVID. And obviously, you know, the CSR and the, you know, that whole topic became very prominent because people had time. There were some experts that said when travel is back, that will probably quiet down a bit and we'll focus again on other things. That hasn't really happened. It's still hot off the press and very much out there. Would you agree?
I agree. I don't think it will go away. And I think the one of the biggest challenges the industry is facing is the public perception of what over-tourism is doing. And I think, whereas it was sort of caught on in certain cities like Barcelona and Venice, where cruise ships were coming in and bringing too many people, and it literally got out of control. And then local governments start thinking about how they can improve conditions for people living in the cities. Then you get rent controls because of Airbnb. Yep. Where cities like Barcelona, where my son lives, where basically, you know, you can't rent a flat because they're all rented out to tourists. So who can live in the city anymore? These are genuine problems. So there's that sort of over-tourism. And then there's the climate-related tourism, where people are more and more talking about, well, it is flying halfway around the world a good thing, and yet it's easier and cheaper to fly than ever before. I mean, growing up in the 1980s, a plane ticket anywhere cost a fortune. Today, it's as cheap as a...
It's crazy that you grew up in the 1980s when you're only 32, Chris. I mean, how does that work?
Time flies, obviously. But it's a fundamental problem for the industry to deal with and talk about openly is whether encouraging people to travel more and more is going to be good for the environment. And so I think we have to talk about it. Business travel in particular, which is controlled by travel management companies, are keeping a very close eye on what companies are doing, because they are being forced to look at their own CSR policies and governance in terms of what are they allowing employees to do and how much carbon footprint they're creating and all of these things. So, and then you go outside here in Brussels and it's 35 degrees and you think, yeah, it's the climate is changing. So what do we as an alliance do about it? We can't do a lot ourselves. We're an alliance. We don't operate or own anything. But what we're doing is working with our brands to look at what each of our brands is doing and showcasing that to customers. So we created the Green Collection. About half of our hotels are now part of that collection. And in order to join the Green Collection, you quite simply have to have been certified by one of the credible international organizations that has sustainability certification. So a new build hotel like this becomes part of the Green Collection because it may be LEED certified or it may have followed certain international standards that have been checked and are credible.
Yeah.
And to customers, you can say, okay, this hotel has done all that's necessary according to this international organization. And so people are going to continue on to travel. The question is what we as an industry can do to protect the environment, but at the same time to allow people to continue to travel, which is what everyone so aspires to.
And how has that translated for clients, or for members of the Discovery Program, a Green Collection? Because I imagine that's something that's been fairly well received in the fact that, you know, when I book now or when I'm interested in a hotel, I can see, you know, who is part of that collection and who isn't. I would imagine it's been fairly well received.
It's well received. And I think that it's interesting because, of course, business travel organizations are actually forcing customers to choose hotels that have some level of certification.
Right.
So that's forcing customers to recognize what hotels are doing. That in itself, it's all about discipline. That in itself forces hotels to get themselves certified. by getting themselves certified, we're then adding them to our green collection, and we're promoting those as hotels who have got a level of certification. And that same business traveler comes back as a leisure traveler and sees, oh, this hotel's in the green collection. It's part of an organization that has certified it as sustainable and credible at doing everything that we would expect a luxury modern hotel to be doing. And so it is a virtuous circle, but it's not something that happens overnight, and customers' behavior change. And if I was honest, I would say for a lot of customers, it just doesn't even appear on their sort of list of reasons they might choose a hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality. Yeah. But if it edges up that list and we're doing something about it, then bit by bit, we start to make a difference.
Mm. Simon, if we look at the travel world, and something that we're always exposed to is, you know, how the world is working or not working. I think we can all agree that certainly 2025 so far has been, you know, there's been a lot going on around the globe in one capacity or another. How easy is it at the moment to manage an ultra, high-end luxury hotel chain, even if it's boutique and, you know, you don't have thousands of hotels around the world? But I imagine sometimes you must wake up, open the news and think, can we not just relax everyone and calm down? Because these things must affect the way you plan, the way you guys do business, the way your clients come to you when there's, you know, geopolitical unrest, there's travel bans and so on and so forth. How does that translate into running a company that is, you know, growing with new openings all around the corner and so on and so forth?
First of all, I would use the word resilience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I would ask it in a different way, because we all tend to be focused on what's going on right now. And certainly you switch on the news and there's a lot of issues around the world. But can you name me a time in the past 100 years when there hasn't been? So when I've been with the company 30 years now, so I've been part of this journey and very proud to be part of this journey for 30 years. And when I look at over our annual reports, we're a public company, so every year we have to report on our results. And one year it was SARS, and the next year it was some war somewhere, and then it was COVID. But look, this is reality. What is very true is there's an immediate appreciation of news and what's going on around the world nowadays. I'm an eternal optimist, right? And to add to what Chris was saying earlier, there's 8 billion people in this world, and there's a whole load of huge numbers who are, over the next 10, 20 years, going to come into a realm of wealth where they will want to travel, and they will want to go to the places where we're sitting. They will want to come to Europe. They will want to go to the United States. They will want to explore Asia and Africa. So this is not something that's going to stop. The whole sustainability argument needs to be addressed, and needs to be, all this growth needs to be handled in a manner which is not going to destroy the reason why people want to travel. But we'll get there. The human race will find its solutions, and we'll find ways to run companies, and we'll find ways to make sure we don't waste too much
energy. Run the place into the ground. Yeah. Yeah. And partnerships, Simon, are obviously part of that.
Yes.
Like the ones, the one that you have with the GHA. Walk me through kind of your perception on loyalty, and also how, you know, Chris and the gang, if I may call them that, have contributed to you know, bringing some form of loyalty, and perhaps also cross promotion to Corinthia. How do you view that and evaluate that?
There are two or three points to analyze. First of all, on a matter of principle, does loyalty work in the luxury space? So you'll find a lot of very valid companies who do not have their loyalty programs, and they're still independent and doing very well. On the other hand, if you look at the large loyalty programs in the world today, including of GHA, there's a lot of migration from one tier to another. And in our case, it's from one brand to another. So for a company like us that's, let's say, from the point of view of the global footprint, very small, right? We're not in every city in the world. But for us to have the ability to reach out to customers of the hundreds of other hotels and 45 brands that are around the world, and whenever they're in cities where we are, to stay with us, that's a huge benefit for us. And then there's the economic argument, which is this is purely a distribution game, right? This is a channel shift. How do we sell our rooms? Do we sell them through intermediaries, or do we sell them off the strength of our brand? And to sell them off the strength of our brand, we're amplifying that possibility through the GHA because we're selling to the clients who are already clients of ours.
Yeah. Chris, if we look at the companies that you've added and the brands that you have in the GHA, how have these conversations changed when you're speaking to members that you know have been with you for a while, perhaps that are new to the alliance? Are they still asking the same questions? Are there new points that are coming in from the C-level that you speak with and on a regular basis? There's a CEO meeting that's happening the next couple of days where I'm sure there'll be some chats as well. Is it always relevant to current topics? Is there an element of outlook? Walk me through, because you speak to a lot of people, so I'm trying to pick your brain. What are they telling you, or what are they asking you? What are they asking from the alliance, perhaps from the loyalty, from discovery? What are some of the conversations you've been having recently?
Well, I think the thing that continues to drive everyone's enthusiasm and energy for the alliance, and gathering all the CEOs of the different brands together, what are they really talking about? I mean, first thing, and I always sort of ask this question when we start any of these meetings is, are you all aspiring to remain independent brands over the next 5-10 years? And do your owners still believe that independence from the big chains and players is the future for you? And the answer is yes. That's why they're part of the alliance. They want to remain independent, to have this culture of owning and operating assets and not being reliant on third parties.
In the interest of time, because otherwise the people that are organizing, the three of us, are going to get upset with us, I have one more question for you, Simon. Then we're going to play a little game at the end, which I'm very much looking forward to. And I think everybody in the room is, except the two of you. So I'm curious how this goes. Simon, a quick word on the future for Corinthia, some openings on the horizon. There's obviously, an element of, as you said, managing growth, managing an increase in properties and an increase in team members, HR. Give me an outlook in kind of what's on the horizon in 2026. What are we going to see from you? Is there some dirty little secrets that you can share exclusively on Smack today, which I know you've come prepared for?
I certainly won't share any secrets because we have none.
Very good. It's because you're a public company, so there you are.
Look, we've just opened three hotels, right? In New York, in Bucharest, beautiful hotel, 35 suites in an old palace. Mm. And here in Brussels, which is a restored or rebuilt...
it's beautiful. Those of you that are listening at home.
We'll be opening hotels in Rome in the next months, another landmark for the city of Rome. And then we're under construction in some form or other, either with us as the investor or as purely as an operator with somebody else acting as the investor, in Doha, in Dubai, and in Riyadh, and the Maldives.
That's strong focus on the Middle East?
Well, there's a lot of growth in the Middle East, so obviously we have to be there, and we'd like to be there. That's a very important part of the travel world in today's world, and has been for many years. We want to do more in the United States, so we've just done some property deals, not so much hotel deals at this stage, in California, and we're looking in other parts of the United States. Also in the Caribbean, we've just signed up to a few, to one particular deal that we'll be announcing in the next months, to develop a resort in a prime location in the Caribbean. So on the one hand, we're opportunistic. We'll go where the opportunities lie, especially on the real estate side. On the other hand, we're pretty much now focused and strategic of where do we want the brand to be. And that obviously counts all the main cities around the world. And at some point in 26, we'll start looking to the east. We, as a company, we've been mainly in Europe and the Gulf and the United States. Now that we've got a momentum going there, it's time to dedicate effort and time and some money to building a profile in China and Southeast Asia and India, which is, if you take a 50-year view, that's where the bulk of the growth will come in the coming period.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
I'd like to invite the two of you to play a game that we call Book by Bulldoze. So I'm going to give you, don't worry, nobody's getting hurt, Chris, I promise. I'm going to give you three names, three membership, in your case, I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. I'm going to give you three membership programs in one capacity or another, not necessarily anything to do with hospitality. And you can book one, so use one. You can buy another and add it, integrate it into GHA. let's assume money is not a factor, and you have to bulldoze one and kill it.
So book, buy, bulldoze.
And I'm going to give you Amex membership rewards, Amazon Prime, and Miles and More Star Alliance. Ah, see, we came for the tough questions, Chris. We didn't come for the easy ones here today.
Buy Amex membership rewards.
Okay. You're going to make a lot of people unhappy if you bulldoze Amazon Prime.
Book. I'm going Miles and More.
Mm.
And I'm going to make a lot of shoppers unhappy.
And it's the end of Amazon Prime?
I'm not going Amazon Prime. They're going to be, sooner or later, they're going to be on our list of
most
hated suppliers, because what they charge us to book one of our rooms, I think. It's so I'm going to bulldoze them.
Sounds good. Simon, I've got a tricky one for you. Same thing. You can book one, buy another. And again, we'll assume money is not of essence, which is obviously in quite the assumption, and bulldoze another. And you have obviously three hospitality brands of your comp set. I'm going to give you Six Senses, Mandarin Oriental, and Aman.
Can we buy?
No, we cannot buy. I'm afraid that's not
They're
an option.
Obviously very wealthy, so they...
And I'll take an explanation from you as to why, only for the buy, what do you like about the one that you're going to buy?
Well, it's not like I've stayed in many of their hotels,
right.
But I tend to stay at our own hotels.
Fair enough.
The one which I know better as a client, let's put it this way, because again, I don't spend too much time in resorts because I don't have much time, is the Mandarin Oriental brand, which I think is a phenomenal brand, and they've done a great job. And many of the hotels that I've stayed in have been great hotels.
So we're buying them or we're booking them?
Well, I'm not sure what the better benefit is, right, between buying and booking. But
if you could buy them and bring them into the alliance, I'd be happy. So,
win for everyone.
I'm sure they'll ask for a lot of money for the brand. So let's put them on the buy list because they're a company to watch and admire. And again, this is almost all anecdotal now, right? So the other options are book. And bulldoze.
Correct.
Which are two extremes.
Two extremes, yes.
On the basis, just in the spirit of GHA, I guess I would answer this, that Aman still has this boutique-y feel to it. I'd book there in almost solidarity.
Yes.
From the point of view of size of company.
Fair. Yeah.
Although they're a big company. But and purely for that reasons, because Six Senses is now part of a much bigger.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I would bulldoze that.
Very good.
And now I've made an enemy in Six Senses.
Regardless, but not from me, because I'd have said the same thing.
You would have gone the same three?
I can deal with Jeff Bezos not liking me because he'll never meet me anyway.
By the way, we disassociate ourselves from whatever Chris is saying. Right?
Very good.
We don't want to have such powerful enemies.
So Amazon Prime, they can ask, keep using them because they're very handy. But no, I've always been a admirer of membership rewards, Amex. Mm. It's a great program. They've got great customer base and they're a great supplier for the industry. It's a reasonable cost of sale and great customers for luxury hotels as well. So I'll have them.
You'll have them. Gentlemen, just like that, 40 minutes have passed. Thank you for your time. I know
you guys
have a busy schedule, but it was a pleasure speaking to you both. Simon, good to meet you. Thank you so much. And
Chris,
nice to catch up. Thank you. That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.